The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi there, this is Janice Peary for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Today it is May, the month of May, and there's a very special day this month. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm going to see if you can figure it out from this first story. Or perhaps you know it already, and this story will show you if you are right or not. So here we go. And it is by the Berenstain Bears. It is a Berenstain Bear story by Jan and Stan Berenstain, and also Mike Berenstain. So here we go. It's called We Love Our Mom. It was springtime in Bear County, and everything was fresh and fragrant. The trees were budding in the bright springtime green. The lilacs were in full bloom. Early butterflies flitted from tulip to daffodil, and all the mothers of Bear County were busy taking care of their little ones. Mama Robin was feeding worms to her chirping little fledglings. Mama Rabbit was teaching her baby bunnies how to hop. Mama Frog was taking a jar full of tadpoles out for a stroll on a little wagon. And in the Bear family's treehouse, Mama Bear was taking care of her cubs. It was breakfast time, and Mama was cooking pancakes for the family. Mama's pancakes not only tasted good, but they looked good, too. She made them into little bear faces for Brother, Sister, and Little Honey. They always liked to eat the ears off first. Thank you, Mama, they sang, pouring lots of honey on their steaming hot pancakes. Mama Bear took care of her cubs in plenty of other ways, too. She washed their clothes. She sewed their buttons back on their clothes when they popped off. She bandaged their boo-boos when they skinned their knees or stubbed their toes. She gave them baths, read them stories, and tucked them in at night. She gave them hugs when they woke up with bad dreams. All day, every day, Mama Bear was there for her cubs. "Well, I'm off to Grizzly Grand," said Papa, finishing up his breakfast. A rocker on her favorite rocking chair came loose, and I fixed it for her. "Can we come?" asked Brother and Sister. "Of course," Papa said. "Grizzly Gran and Gramps will be very glad to see you." Papa loaded up the rocking chair, and they all set off. "Look at all those springtime babies and their mums," said Sister. "Spring is a time for new babies, and for their mothers, too. And don't forget, Mother's Day is coming up." And now you all know or remember that May is Mother's Day. The second Sunday of May is always Mother's Day. And on with our story. Brother and Sister had forgotten about Mother's Day. They needed to figure out what they were doing for their mama on her special day. "Howdy, Grand Cubs," said Grandpa Grizzly Gramps when they arrived. "Always great to see you." Gran tried out her rocking chair. "Why, it's as good as new," she said. "Thank you, son. You're so good to me." "Gee, Ma," said Papa, "it was just a loose rocker." "Well, little things like that mean a lot to us moms," Gran smiled and gave Papa a kiss. "Now, cubs, come and look what I'm working on." She had a big scrapbook out on the table. "This is my mama's book," she said. "It holds so many good memories." She pointed to a picture of a pretty young bear holding a baby. "Like this." "Who's that?" asked Brother. "That's me," Gran smiled. "You look so young," said Sister. "I was young," Gran laughed. "That's your father when he was born." "Our father?" they said. "You mean Papa?" "Of course," said Gran. "But he's so little," they both said. "Yes," agreed Gran. "He has grown." "Well, Ma," said Papa, "we've got to go, but we'll see you next week on Mother's Day. We're all going out to brunch at the old Grizzly Inn." On the way home, Brother and Sister thought about their day, that scrapbook, and Papa doing nice things that meant so much to Gran, who was his mother. "We need to do something special for Mama on Mother's Day," said Sister. How about making a mama's book like Gran's, suggested Papa. You could put together a scrapbook all about being a mother.
Yes, said Brother, we can use family photos from the old box in the closet.
A mama's book for our own Mama Bear, said Sister, nodding. When they got home, Brother and Sister sneaked the box of photos out of the closet, took it to their room, and got to work. They spread the pictures on the floor and went through them. They used one of their old school notebooks for a scrapbook. They picked and chose, cut and pasted, lettered and colored, and by supper time they were all done. They hid the finished scrapbook away in a drawer. They could not wait for Mother's Day to arrive. A week later, Brother, Sister, Papa, and Honey ran into Mama and Papa's room first thing in the morning.
Happy Mother's Day, they called. Here's your present, Mama.
For me, said Mama sleepily.
How nice.
And she unwrapped her present.
Why, it's a Mama's book, just like Gran's, she said. How wonderful. I've always wanted one like it.
Thank you, my dears, thank you. And she gave them all a big hug and a kiss. And even the little girl, Honey, was up on the bed, enjoying the book, even though she really hadn't helped. She was too little. And so Mama opened the first page, and it said, Mama's Book. It had pictures of Mama with her three babies, Brother, Sister, and little Honey.
You were so cute, Brother, said Mama, so round and plump. We all called you Chubby Cubby.
Sister laughed. But you, Sister, said Mama, you cried all the time. We called you Cranky Paws, and it was Brother's turn to laugh.
Then Honey came along, said Mama. She was so sweet, we just called her Honey.
Mama pointed to her picture.
Honey pointed to her picture. Baby, she said.
And there's a picture of Mama holding little Honey when little Honey was only 2 days old. There was a tear in Mama's eye when she came to the end.
Thank you, my dears, she said again, hugging them all. This is the most wonderful Mother's Day gift I have ever gotten.
Happy Mother's Day, Mama, said Brother and Sister.
Happy, said Honey.
And now, said Papa, it's time for us all to get ready to take Mama and Gran out for their Mother's Day brunch. And that is exactly what they did.
Well, I guess it didn't take you long to figure out the special day in May that I was talking about is Mother's Day. And so don't forget, think about your mother on that day and maybe get her a card or that you have made yourself, because usually mothers prefer things made by their very own kids. Anyways, on to our next story. And this story is about a little fish, and it is called Poor Doreen, A Fishy Tale by Sally Lloyd-Jones and Alexandra Boyger. In the deep, drowsy waters of a long, winding creek, an ample, roundy fish called Miss Doreen Randolph Potts is swimming along on her way upstream to visit her second cousin twice removed, who's just had 157 babies. Can you believe that? Fish actually have a lot of babies when they have babies. They lay lots of eggs, and then the little eggs break, and the little fish come out of them. But Doreen, who is swimming up creek, oh dear, what is about to happen? By the water's edge, a fisherman wearing a coat the color of the sun and a great blue heron wearing the feathers of a color of a stormy sky with a neck like an S for spear are both fishing. Oh, poor Doreen, yes. Doreen doesn't see them. Through the glittering water, she spies a dragonfly darting, dancing deliciously above her.
Goody, cries Doreen, how lucky for me, a lovely snack from my journey, and glides to the surface, her mouth gurgling out into a big round O for open.
And in one gulp, Doreen swallows the dragonfly whole. But, oh, except, wait, it's not a dragonfly. Oh, poor Doreen. No, it's a hook, and it's not a treat. It's a trap. And the one thing you're not is lucky. This may be the most awful day of your life. Worse, it may be your last day of your life. The fisherman arches his back into a sea for catch. The great blue heron braces for his dinner. He sees that fish coming up on the hook. Oh, dear. The end of that line that holds the hook, that holds the dragonfly, that holds Doreen, speeds to the water closer and closer to the fisherman, wearing the coat the color of the sun, and the great blue heron wearing a coat the color of a stormy sky. Poor, poor Doreen. Whee! Cheers, Doreen. What a remarkable swimmer I am. I'll be with my cousin in no time. She doesn't realize quite yet that she's actually on a hook. The fisherman jerks the line, raises his fishing pole high and back, gives one final pull. Yippee! Cried Doreen. I'm going on an outing. Oh, dear, Doreen, no, you are not. You're going up, out, and up, and down. And now you're doing a great belly fish flop at the feet of a fisherman wearing a coat the color of the sun, and a great blue heron wearing a coat the color of a stormy sky. The skillful fisherman carefully removes the hook. How delightful, gasps the poor little fish. A rest on my journey. Doreen is sort of dumb, isn't she? Oh, poor Doreen. It's not a rest. It is the end. She's in the fisherman's bucket. No sooner is the hook out than the great blue heron launches from his lookout, exploding to the air and folding his wings into a great flapping W for watch out. Yes, watch out, Doreen. You are about to be eaten. From under the fisherman's very nose, the great blue heron snaps the fish up and swoops off into the shallows. He struts about on those long legs, holds his head up high in the air, and, yes, puffs his chest out into a great big P for proud. And with a mouthful of ample roundy fish, he takes off. Bravo, thank you, kind sir, cheers the unfortunate Doreen. How considerate to escort me on my journey upstream. The great blue heron has never had a fish dinner, thank him, before. And, sir, Doreen asks him by any chance, are you by any chance? What made her ask this, we shall never know. Oh, help, poor Doreen, asking a great heron if he is an egret is as bad as asking your teacher, are you by any chance related to a poisonous toad? When the fish-eating machine heron hears Doreen's ignorant question, he has to set her straight, has to open his beak to snap, good gracious, madam, I am no such thing. And at that instant, Doreen slips from his jaws. Well, maybe she's not so dumb after all. Plunging and plummeting and twisting and turning, and look, she cries, I'm flying. She opens her umbrella. Oh, Poreen, you are not flying, you're falling. Whoopee, she shouts, I didn't know I could fly. Oh, dear Doreen, no, you really can't. You're swimming through the sky and into the glittering water. The fish falls. Far from the fisherman wearing a coat the color of the sun and the great blue heron wearing a coat the color of a stormy sky, back into the deep, drowsy water at last, curving, arching, weaving, rushing upstream, in a beautiful S for swimming. Wonderful, she cries. What a pleasant journey I've had. The surface of the water grows smooth once more. The great blue heron flies off so that no one can see him blushing. And so it was that a fisherman lost his catch and a great blue heron lost his dinner and his pride. And
A little girl with her fishing net saw only her daddy coming home wearing a coat the color of the sun. And no sign at all of a great blue heron wearing a coat the color of a stormy sky, or an extremely rare southern belle ample roundy fish called Miss Doreen Randolph Potts, who at that very moment was having a marvelous reunion with her second cousin twice removed and her 157 babies, and telling them the most incredible high-flying fishy tale no one would ever have believed in a million years, if it wasn't true. And that's the end of Poor Doreen, the sort of not-so-smart little fish. Our next story is Where the Wild Things Are, by Morris Sendak. This is one of my very favorite stories. Maybe you've heard this one before and like it too. But anyways, here we go. Where the Wild Things Are. That night, Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind and another. There it is. He's messing up his room. He's making a tent with sheets and piling books all over the floor and hanging one of his teddy bears from a hanger and chasing the little dog, their little dog, down the hall. He's all this in his wolf suit. And his mother called him Wild Thing. And Max said, I'll eat you up. And so he, because he was so wild that evening, he was sent to bed without eating anything. That very night, in Max's room, a forest grew and grew and grew until his ceiling hung with vines and the walls became the world all around. And an ocean tumbled by with a private boat for Max, and he sailed off through the night and day and in and out of weeks and almost over a year to where the wild things are. He came to an island, I guess, and when he came to the place where the wild things are, they roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws, till Max said, be still, and tamed them with the magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking once, and they were frightened and called him the most wild thing of all. And they made him king of all the wild things. And now, cried Max, let the wild rumpus start. And so there all those wild things are jumping and dancing around and hanging from tree branches and dancing funny dances and carrying him on their shoulders. And Max there was part of the rumpus too, hanging from tree branches, dancing around. And he was given a crown. Now stop, Max said, and sent the wild things off to bed without their supper. And Max, the king of all wild things, was lonely and wanted to be where someone loved him best of all. But the wild things cried, oh, please don't go. We will eat you up. We love you so. And then from all around, far away across the world, he smelled good things to eat. And so he gave up being king of where the wild things are. But the wild things did not want him to go, and Max said, please don't go. They said, please don't go. But Max said, no. The wild things roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. But Max stepped into his private boat and waved goodbye and sailed back over a year and in and out of weeks and through a day into the night of his very own room, where he found his supper waiting for him, and it was still hot. The story is called The Letter, and is from a book called Frog and Toad Are Friends by Arnold Lobel. Toad was sitting on his front porch. Frog came along and said, what's the matter, Toad? You are looking sad. Yes, said Toad, this is my sad time of day.
It is the time when I wait for the mail to come. It always makes me very unhappy.
Why is that? Asked Frog.
Because I never get any mail, said Toad.
Not ever? Asked Frog.
No, never, said Toad. No one has ever sent me a letter. Every day my mailbox is empty. That is why waiting for the mail is a sad time for me.
Frog and Toad sat on the porch, feeling sad together.
Then Frog said, I have to go home now, Toad. There is something that I must do, and Frog hurried home.
He found a pencil and a piece of paper. He wrote on the paper. He put the paper in an envelope. On the envelope he wrote, a letter for Toad.
Frog ran out of his house. He saw a snail he knew.
Snail, said Frog, please take this letter to Toad's house and put it in his mailbox.
Sure, said Snail, right away.
Then Frog ran back to Toad's house.
Toad was in bed, taking a nap.
Toad, he said Frog, I think you should get up and wait for some mail some more.
No, said Toad, I'm tired of waiting for the mail.
Frog looked out of the window at Toad's mailbox. The snail was not there yet.
Toad, said Frog, you may never know when someone may send you a letter.
No, no, said Toad, I do not think anyone will ever send me a letter.
Frog looked out of the window. The snail was not there yet.
But Toad, said Frog, someone may send you a letter today.
Don't be silly, said Toad. No one has ever sent me a letter before, and no one will send me a letter today.
Frog looked out of the window. The snail was still not there.
Frog, why do you keep looking out the window? Asked Toad.
Because now I am waiting for the mail, said Frog.
But there will not be any, said Toad.
Oh, yes, there will, said Frog, because I have sent you a letter.
You have, said Frog.
What did you write in the letter?
Frog said, I wrote, Dear Toad, I am glad that you are my best friend.
Your best friend, Frog.
Oh, said Toad, that makes a very good letter.
Then Frog and Toad went out to the front porch to wait for the mail.
They sat there and sat there, feeling happy together.
Frog and Toad waited a long time.
And 4 days later, the snail finally got to Toad's house and gave him the letter from Frog.
And Toad was very, very pleased to have it.
Now, this story is called Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day by Judith Viorst. I went to sleep with gum in my mouth. And now there's gum in my hair, and when I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on the skateboard, and by a mistake I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At breakfast, Anthony found a Corvette Stingray car kit in his breakfast cereal box, and Nick found a junior undercover agent code ring in his breakfast cereal box. But in my breakfast cereal box, all I found was breakfast cereal. I think I'll move to Australia. In the carpool, Mrs. Gibson let Becky have a seat by the window. Audrey and Elliot got seats by the window, too. I said I was being smushed. I said, if I don't get a seat by the window, I'm going to be carsick.
No one even answered.
I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At school, Mrs. Dickens liked Paul's picture of the sailboat better than my picture of the invisible castle. At singing time, she said, I sang too loud. At counting said, I left out 16.
Who needs 16?
I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I could tell because Paul said I wasn't his best friend anymore. He said that Philip Parker was his best friend best friend, and that Albert Moyo was his next best friend, and that I was only his third best friend.
I hope you sit on a tack, I said to Paul. I hope the next time you get a double-decker strawberry ice cream cone, the ice cream part falls off the cone part and lands in Australia.
There are two cupcakes in Philip Parker's lunch bag, and Albert got a Hershey bar with almonds, and Paul's mother gave him a piece of jelly roll that had little coconut sprinkles on those on the top. Guess whose mother forgot to put in dessert? It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And that's what it was, because after school, my mom took us all to the dentist, and Dr. Fields found a cavity just in me.
Come back next week and I'll fix it, said Dr. Fields.
Next week, I said, I'm going to Australia. On the way down, the elevator door closed on my foot, and while we were waiting for my mom to go get the car, Anthony made me fall where it was muddy, and when I started crying because of the mud, Nick said I was a crybaby, and while I was punching Nick for saying crybaby, my mom came back with the car and scolded me for being muddy and fighting. I am having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, I told everybody. No one even answered. So then we went to the shoe store to buy some sneakers. Anthony chose white ones with blue stripes. Nick chose red ones with white stripes. I chose blue ones with red stripes. But then the shoe man said, we're all sold out. And they made me buy plain old white ones, but they can't make me wear them. When we picked up my dad at his office, he said I could not play with his copying machine, but I forgot. He also said to watch out for the books on his desk, and I was as careful as I could be, except for my elbow. He also said, don't fool around with his phone, but I think I called Australia. My dad said, please don't pick him up anymore. It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. There were lima beans for dinner, and I hate limas. There was kissing on TV, and I hate kissing. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes, and my marble went down the drain, and I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. I hate those pajamas. When I went to bed, Nick took back the pillow he said I could keep, and Mickey Mouse nightlight burned out, and I bit my tongue. And the cat wants to sleep with Anthony, not me. It has been a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. My mom says some days are like that, even in Australia. And that is the end of that one.
Well, we run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. I hope you listen next. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For more information about NCRS, visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Read to Succeed on the North Carolina Reading Service.